from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. To get this show every day, you can subscribe on the brand new podcast app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can also get in your car and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Giants Baseball. Today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there, do that, get rewarded. Coming up on today's show, we are going to discuss the game notes from yesterday's disappointing 7-3 loss to the New York Mets. We'll talk about Sean Anderson's pitching performance, and in the second half of the show, we're going to focus more on some individual players on the Giants who are not performing well, and the sample is large enough, and why I think it might be time to pull the plug on someone who might be very popular even in the clubhouse. But first, with the 7-3 loss, the Giants fell to 25-36. The Dodgers were off yesterday, so the Giants fell to 17 games back in the National League West. They have a minus 81 run differential, which is the worst in the National League. That run differential has an expected win-loss record of 23-38. The Giants had a chance to push themselves to being around 500 on the road if they could have had a good series in New York, but they lost 2 out of 3 and they fell to 15-18 on the road. They're 10-18 at home. So jumping right into the game notes, Sean Anderson had a very rough bottom of the first inning. He allowed a home run to Ahmed Rosario, who was the first batter of the inning, and then he allowed a home run to Dominic Smith, the second batter of the inning. He then walked Pete Alonso and gave up a single to Michael Conforto. So homer, homer, walk, single. And then there was a lineout. So not a very good first five batters for Sean Anderson, but then he got Adani Echevarria to ground into a double play, and the Mets did not score again until the seventh inning. So Anderson did a tremendous job of rebounding from that rough start and was pitching into the seventh inning. I thought it was a little bit long to extend him. His pitch count was very low, so that was not the issue. The issue is the Giants' bullpen is very good, and it was third time through the order for Anderson, if not fourth time through the order. And all the evidence shows that pitchers get dramatically worse the deeper they go into games. Some guys, I can understand it, but in a one-run game, the Giants led 3-2 at that point. If you don't really care about winning that game, I can understand just seeing what he can do deeper and deeper into the game. But Bruce Bochy, by all accounts, wants to do everything in his power to win games in his last season here. I know we say all the time they're not really in contention right now, but I'm sure that they don't want to believe that, and he doesn't want to believe that. So if you're just trying to win a game, to me it doesn't make any sense to let Sean Anderson start the seventh inning there. And sure enough, he walked the leadoff hitter, and that run came around to score to tie the game. But before all that happened, in the third inning, he got Pete Alonso out on three straight changeups after falling behind 2-0. So good to see, you know, using off-speed pitches when behind in the count. That is the sign of a major league quality pitcher, being able to command your off-speed stuff, and that's what Sean Anderson started to do, and it was how he was able to end up going relatively deep into this game. But that was impressive. Pete Alonso is a very good hitter. In the top of the fourth, Mike Yastrzemski hit a single, and then Brandon Belt later homered in the inning to tie the game at 2-2. It was a 97-mile-an-hour fastball down and away, and Belt hit it to the opposite field gap. So a nice piece of hitting, more clutch performance by Belt tying a game there in the fourth inning. Joe Panik made a really nice defensive play in the bottom of the fourth to start a double play. What else is new? He's done that several times in the last few games. You know, he's not hitting much overall on the season. I know he's been better lately, but that first month counts too. But his defense has been keeping him afloat as a producer for the Giants. Right around this point and in the fifth inning, Sean Anderson started to just cruise. And then in the top of the sixth, Pablo Sandoval hit a home run off Wheeler that gave the Giants a 3-2 lead. Anderson was a little shaky even in the sixth. He issued a four-pitch walk to Conforto with one out, but he was able to escape the inning without further damage. So to me, I mean, yes, he got out of it, but that was an opportunity to take him out after the walk to Conforto. So it's really easy to second guess after the fact, but I don't want to pretend like I thought that was great to keep him in when it worked out, and it wasn't great to keep him in when it didn't. I thought it would have been a fine time to take him out after that walk to Conforto. So he was only at 77 pitches entering the seventh inning. But yes, he walked the leadoff batter, and that was it for him. Reyes Maranta came in, and a bit unlucky, he allowed an infield single, which put runners on first and second with no outs. Then there was a sacrifice bunt, second and third, one out. They went to pinch hitter Jeff McNeil with Dominic Smith on deck. So you could go to Watson for McNeil, but then the Mets could potentially use JD Davis, who is a right-handed platoon specialist. They ended up using Davis to pinch hit for the next batter. But anyway, Maranta gets a lot of Ks, so it's fine to stick with him there. But McNeil hit a bloop single to left, which scored one run. The second runner stopped on third, and so it was first and third with one out again, this time with Dominic Smith coming up. So the Giants went to Tony Watson for the lefty Smith, and the Mets did pinch hit with JD Davis. Davis grounded into a 6-4-3 double play, so it was a great job by Watson to escape that inning, and the game was tied going into the eighth. In the bottom of the eighth, Pete Alonso was due up first, and Bochy elected to go to Mark Melancon in this inning. So high leverage innings for Mark Melancon. I know he's been much improved, but I'm not convinced he's not the same guy who really struggled with hard contact the last couple of years. So I don't know about you guys, but when he comes in, it's still a little bit nervous time. That being said, you never expect a reliever to give up four runs in an inning. The difference between the best reliever and the worst reliever is like one run per three innings. But there was a lot of hard contact off Melancon in this inning. Pete Alonso led off with a missile single. Then there was a bullet line drive to Brandon Belt that he couldn't quite get his glove on. I mean, he got the glove on it and the ball like blasted out of his glove, but it stayed right around his feet and he was able to throw to second for the out, but they had no chance at the double play. Todd Frazier then hit a two-run homer, which was actually the softest hit ball of the inning off Melancon. It was hit like little less than 95, which is what classifies hard hit is 95 and above, but it was a homer. There was then an infield single, which I guess that would be the lowest exit velocity. But then there was a missile double, made it 6-3 Mets, still runners on the corners. And then there was another single, 7-3 Mets, hit by pitch, bases loaded. Pete Alonso came up for the second time in the inning and mercifully popped out. So Melancon was done, 29 pitches, 4 runs, his worst outing of the season. The Giants went down 1-2-3 against Yuri's Familia in the ninth. And the final score was 7-3. The Giants only had 3 hits in the game, 2 homers and that single for Yastrzemski. They also only drew 1 walk. That was by Brandon Crawford. So anyway, what looked like it could be a nice recovery by Anderson and a clutch win in New York to win a series turned into an ugly game with the Giants losing by 4, losing a series and having to fly across the country after a tough loss. In the next half of the show, we are going to discuss some key players for the Giants and why I think they might be on thin ice, or at least should be. To get this show every single day, subscribe on the brand new podcast app Himalaya. It's free, super easy to use, and has every single podcast you love or are searching for. They have personally curated playlists made just for you by their expert podcast tastemakers, themed collections of shows to help with podcast discovery. You can find everything from comedy to mystery, thrillers, and sports. Listeners can follow their favorite shows and creators, like and comment on individual episodes, and build podcast playlists by the episode. Customize it just like a playlist for songs and share it through social, text, and email. Find and download Himalaya on the App Store or Google Play Store. And don't forget to follow Locked On Giants Baseball when you're there. So that's all coming up next, but first, okay, so as promised, we're going to take a little bit of a step back and look at some performers for the Giants and why I think one player in particular might and perhaps should be on thin ice. So that player is Kevin Pillar. The Giants acquired him early in the season, and he had a good couple of weeks there to start the year, but all told, the production at the plate has been very, very subpar, hitting .213 with a .243 on base and a .344 slugging. And the defense has left much to be desired as well. Doesn't look like he's running the best that he's ran in his career. I mean, there's just no question. He used to be elite runner and defender. And it looks like, you know, speed is something that peaks very early in a career. So Kevin Pillar is only 30 years old, but just seeing some wear and tear, and how much longer can they just accept this level of production? And I don't think they can. Aaron Altherr is out there on waivers right now. He could be claimed. And to me, I think he represents a more intriguing short-term and long-term possibility for the Giants. Pillar is controllable for one season beyond 2019 through arbitration, but based on the way he's playing, he seems like a real non-tender candidate. What that means is that the Giants do not have to tender him a contract and he would become a free agent. So they're not really on the hook for anything beyond 2019. Altherr, meanwhile, is in his first year of arbitration eligibility, so he has multiple years of controllability beyond 2019. What concerns me about Kevin Pillar is that outside the zone swing rate has not improved at all. It looked kind of like an anomaly, like something that you shouldn't hope would last, just regression to the mean you would hope would come into play. But he's still swinging at pitches outside of the strike zone 46% of the time, which is by far the highest in MLB. No one else is even close. But the weird thing about that is that he does not have a particularly high rate of swings at pitches inside the strike zone. So he's extremely aggressive, but only on pitches outside of the zone. And if you watch, you know, they have the box now for the strike zone in games, and you can see how often he swings at a pitch that's not a strike and how often he takes a pitch that is a strike. It's kind of an alarming thing. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like this. I would expect him to get better. I don't think he's this bad, but I'm just wondering aloud how much longer they're going to let this continue where the production is just absolutely unacceptably poor. He's producing no better than Gerardo Parra or Yonhervis Solarte were, and that plug was pulled several weeks ago. So another guy who's really ultimately been rather disappointing has been Steven Duggar. He's just become pretty much an automatic out at the plate, .241 average, .283 on base, .350 slugging. I really, really am a fan of his center field defense, but all told, it's just you can't have this many automatic outs in your lineup long term. I mean, they just are going to have to try some other alternatives. I just don't know how long they can stick with guys who are just absolutely not getting it done. I think if you had to choose between Duggar and Pillar, you definitely choose Duggar because the defense is better and he's still developing as a player, whereas Pillar is probably on the downslope of his career and Duggar is just starting to get exposed to the major leagues for the very first time. Worth noting that Steven Duggar is really struggling against lefties this year, and against righties, he's not been so bad. The other guys who are really, really struggling right now are Brandon Crawford and Joe Panik. And I do say right now, meaning just on the season as a whole, if you take a step back and look at the numbers that are being put up, these are some dreadful offensive numbers. But with Panik, you have the fallback of defense, much like with Duggar. With Crawford, same thing. Plus, you have the fact that you're tied up long-term in a contract, and he has a full no-trade clause. So you're kind of stuck with Crawford. Panik and Duggar, you can live with the offense because of the defense, and there is some upside, particularly in a platoon. But that's why I kind of see Pillar. And then you also talk about Mike Yastrzemski, who's come back down to earth a little bit after a hot start. But again, you're evaluating with Yastrzemski, and I think we're beyond that point with Kevin Pillar. At the very least, it would make sense to claim Aaron Altherr again and hope to get him into your minor league system. Coming up tonight, the Giants will take on the Dodgers in the first of a three-game series. Drew Pomeranz back on the mound for the Giants. It will be interesting to see how that goes. He is a lefty. I think the Dodgers are probably a little bit more vulnerable against lefties. That lineup they have is not quite as good as their lineup they use against righties. So it makes sense to use Pomeranz in this situation at home. Hope he can keep the ball in the ballpark. Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Dodgers. On Saturday, it will be Rich Hill against Jeff Samardzija. So two lefties in a row. We'll get to see Tyler Austin play. And then on Sunday, it will be Bumgarner against Walker Buehler. So the Dodgers are good. In my opinion, best team in the National League easily. they have three really good pitchers going, and they don't even they're not even using Hyunjin Ryu, who's been like the best pitcher on earth so far this season. Remember, to get this show every single weekday, please consider subscribing on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. This is a daily show with new episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspic. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. If you like this show, please consider leaving a review and telling your friends and family about us. I cannot wait to be with you again on Monday. And until then, we'll see you next time.